and it had to be important. Chapter 7. A twilight in shades of gold and orange washed over the home Lacey now realized might be too much of a financial burden for her to shoulder alone. A life insurance policy would only get them so far. Among the infinite feelings she was now forced to process, it was this that worried her the most. A sense of guilt began to preside over her for thinking of material things. Her concern should be elsewhere. But how could she not be fearful of what this turn of events would bring for the future of her children? In that moment, her thoughts shifted to the number. Perhaps it had never left her mind, but had merely been pushed back in the light of the circumstances. Or was it that she wished not to believe anything might be off-kilter, and this number was of no consequence at all? Of course it was important and something she could not ignore. She'd seen it. She'd memorized it. But what did it mean? Owen Ballard, with his off-handed remark, sprang to mind, assuming Jay had left them without a financial care in the world. "At least you're financially set," Owen had said. Doubts began to seep in her mind, slithering through the space between the memories and the grief. Lacey wondered if Jay had been dishonest in some way, on the take. But how? Why? He made hordes of money. There would have been no reason to risk everything for what, a few extra bucks? No. She had to stop. No way would this little seed sprout further doubt inside her. It was just Owen being Owen, and it meant nothing. But there was still the number. Lacey rose quietly from the couch and padded toward the kitchen, intending not to disturb the kids, who had again been watching the television. She permitted this lengthy stipend of screen time, both because it kept them distracted, and it allowed her time to process the feelings. Maybe it wasn't the right way to handle the situation, but how exactly was one supposed to handle the death of a spouse? She pulled down the shades on the large window of the breakfast nook as the setting sun blinded her vision. A small kitchen desk was adjacent to the nook, and on that desk was the card of Agent Will Kaysen. Lacey held the card in her fingers, flipping it over and over, considering the consequences of asking for his help. She didn't know him, nor did he know her, but he had made a concerted effort on her behalf, more than once, in fact. He'd been the first to approach her in the conference room, then bringing her the earrings, which she still hadn't the strength to wear. Was there another she could trust more? Certainly not Owen, and really no one at Argus Solutions at all, because if Jay had conducted himself in a disloyal manner, she would not want them to know. But she was again jumping the gun and needed to reel this thing in. Her husband was not capable of deceit, she was sure of it, and speaking with Agent Kaysen would confirm and settle her thoughts on the matter. Her cell phone was within reach and Lacey dialed the agent's number. "Kaysen here."
"Yes, Agent Kaysen, this is Lacey Merrick."
"Good evening. What can I do for you? I don't have any new information on the status of your husband's computer."
"I'm not calling about that, actually. I was wondering if you would consider meeting with me in the morning, say around 9 a.m.
"Sure. What's this about?"
Lacey let his question hang in the air almost too long. "I found something I was hoping you might help me with."
"Is this regarding the mall?"
"No. No, not the mall. Something else. I don't mean to be vague, Agent Kaysen, but I'd feel more comfortable speaking with you about this face-to-face."
Lacey considered the possibility that she wasn't alone on the line. "Sure. 9 o'clock work? Where would you like to meet?"
Lacey waited at a coffee shop near FBI headquarters. She figured that would be the easiest place for Agent Kaysen to meet. After all, he was taking valuable time away from the important matter of the bombing. She understood that, and in fact, getting to the bottom of who took down that mall meant more to her than just about anything right now. She wanted to know who was responsible for killing her husband, as so many of the victims' families did right now, so she respected his time and prayed it would not be wasted on her troubling doubts. Only a few minutes passed when she spotted him enter. He noticed her right away.
"Good morning, Mrs. Merrick."
He didn't bother with the usual follow-up question as to how she was doing. It was fairly obvious. "Good morning, Agent Kaysen. Thank you for meeting with me. I know how busy you are."
"It's not a problem."
He sat down. "Can I get you a coffee?" She felt obliged to ask as she had a cup warming her hands right now. Not that it was cold outside. It wasn't. It was almost June. But Lacey was having a hard time subsiding the chills that crept up on her daily.
"I'm fine, thanks. I try not to drink too much of this stuff, and I've been up for a while, so I've reached my limit for today."
He smiled.
"What is it that you wanted to talk about?"
First, I'd like to ask you, and I have no idea if you're allowed to answer, but have they found any connection of the bombing to the detonating device located at the shop in Baltimore?
Yes, they did. And since your department was involved, it's safe to say that I can share that information with you. The car that was left near the mall entrance, it was a rental, but had been rented by the owner of that shop, Farhan Basara. However, Mr. Basara was murdered a day before, and his family has been brought in for questioning.
If it was his car and the device was found in his shop, why was he killed?
That's a good question, one we're looking into, and more importantly, this was not a suicide bombing. Someone left a bag. So where did that someone go? Why leave a car there at all?
He stopped, seeming to realize he'd gotten ahead of himself.
Anyway, he was most likely involved in a terrorist cell, and the prevailing indication was that they were covering their tracks. The bomb was left by an unknown, so Basara may have been their only loose end.
I see.
But that's not why we're here, is it?
Will continued. No. Lacey retrieved the sticky note from her purse and set it on the table. I found this hidden in my husband's office yesterday. He examined it.
What is it?
I guess that's what I'm here to ask you. It's not a number I recognize, and because of that, my skepticism leads me to believe it could be something more of an aberrant nature. He eyed her with some concern.
You think your husband was hiding something?
I don't know. I really don't. I don't think so. He was a good man, an honest man. Her eyes welled with tears. It's just strange that it was hidden, you know?
Why?
I guess what I'm asking is, do you think it could be an account to something? Maybe a bank or a customer account. And if it is that something you can help me get to the bottom of?
Will held up the note and studied it. I don't know. That would be tough to confirm.
He looked to her.
You work in data analysis. Isn't this something you can search on your own?
I suppose. But I'd have to be logged into the system to have access to the databases, and that's not something I think I can do at the moment. I'm not sure how it would look.
First of all, what is it that you think this is? If you believe it's a bank account, do you believe your husband was embezzling from his company, taking kickbacks for contracts? What exactly would be the reason for a bank account he didn't make his wife aware of?
He laid it on the line, said it out loud, and as she listened to the words coming from his mouth, she could hardly believe it herself. What was she doing here? Was she really accusing Jay of stealing or something just as bad? Lacey reached for the paper. I'm sorry. No, I don't think that's the case at all. I don't know why I'm here. I have to go to the funeral home and approve his obituary, for God's sake.
Will laced his fingers and rested his hands on the table. You're not telling me something. What is it? I don't think you'd pursue something like this unless you had more information.
It was something Owen Ballard said to me. He came to my house the morning after. He looked like he'd had a few and wasn't making much sense. Anyway, he said something. He said that at least Jay had left me and the kids financially secure. She shook her head. Agent Kaysen, our finances are better than good by most anyone's standards, and Jay did have a large life insurance plan, but not that big. And I guess what rubs me the wrong way was that Owen knew of our finances at all. I mean, the two were friends, but Jay wasn't one to speak casually on those subjects. And it was something else, too.
What's that?
Jay and I talked the night before, our last night together, and he asked me an odd question. What it boiled down to was that he wanted to know how it was that Tom Neville, with Nova Investments, could have found out that I worked for the FBI. That's information that would require a fairly high security clearance and certainly not something easily obtainable. I think Jay believed Neville found out, either because Owen told him, which would have been bad enough, or that he found out by way of a background check. And that was before they signed the contract with Argus Solutions.
And this has led you to believe something was going on, maybe between your husband and Ballard, or Ballard and Tom Neville with Nova.
Maybe. I guess that's where I'm headed with this. But I have to know what this number is before I can draw any sort of conclusion. Will pulled out his cell phone.
You mind if I take a picture of it?
Go ahead.
I'll see what I can find out. It's a little outside what I do, but I work with people who can look into these things. And, as it possibly concerns Nova Investments, it's a legitimate request.
Thank you, Agent Kaysen. If I could just put this issue to rest, I think I'll be the better for it.
It's Will, remember?
He began to rise. I'll be in touch, and I'm hoping to get some answers today regarding the laptop and the flash drive. Take care of yourself, Lacey. Agent Kaysen arrived at FBI headquarters and was stopped short of his intended destination. Kaysen, you got a minute. The look on Mendez's face suggested Will should abide by the request. His follow-up on the presumed bank account number given to him by Lacey Merrick would have to take a back seat. Sure, what's going on? Will followed Mendez to the Strategic Information and Operations Center, SIOC, where his team occupied one of the 5 crisis action team rooms. The command post operated 24/7 to provide support for critical incidents, among other needs. They entered the room where several agents were posted at workstations. Rows of tables lined with computer monitors lit up with varying degrees of information, in addition to the wall of monitors that flashed images of the mall and nearby streets. Will had been here before, but as a probationary member of the U.S. Joint Terrorism Task Force, which resided in Louisville. This was his first assignment outside that jurisdiction, and his first terrorist attack. He was trained for this, but the magnitude of the operation still overwhelmed him. Nova Investments is a subsidiary of Liwa Holdings out of Dubai, Mendez began. They operate several property investment firms worldwide, but Nova is their largest U.S. investment. You think Liwa was the target? Kaysen asked. We don't know yet, but we're delving into their background. Mendez approached one of the agents. Porter's found some old ties Basara had to a group in Bahrain, but they haven't been active in quite some time. Is it possible ISIS reached out to this group? Kaysen asked. ISIS hasn't claimed responsibility for this, Porter began. Well, I'm looking for any ISIS recruits in and around Bahrain. I'm also searching for Al-Qaeda's splinter groups, particularly Mirabitan, though their coordinated attack on the hotel in Mali doesn't relate with this sort of indiscriminate act. Agreed, Kaysen began. No one walked into the mall and asked people whether or not they were Muslim and could quote the Quran. Will cast away his gaze for a moment as he considered a troubling thought. What I don't understand is why this man and his family, who'd been here since, what, the early 90s? I can't imagine he'd been part of a sleeper cell for that long. There have been zero indications of any activity from him. His daughter attends a local college, and his wife appeared to have assimilated well enough. And in fact, neither associated with any Muslim organizations, and only occasionally attended their local mosque. Doesn't exactly scream extremism, Mendez replied. No, which makes this all the more interesting. Will turned to Porter. What do we know about Liwa Holdings in Dubai? Anything there as it relates to monies funneling to extremists' organizations? We're still working on that, but to date, no, and these guys would have no reason to target themselves. No, but that doesn't mean we can't consider someone wanting some sort of recourse, maybe another splinter group. We're getting way ahead of ourselves here, Mendez interrupted. Let's continue to work on what we know about Basara and his U.S. and Bahrain connections. He began to walk away. We know more about him, and we'll know more about his motivations. Will waited until Mendez was out of earshot before turning back to Porter. Listen, can I ask you to take a look at something? Sure, what is it? Will retrieved his cell phone and pulled up the image of the supposed bank account number he'd received from Lacey. You think you could find out if this is a bank account? He showed him the picture. Porter squinted his eyes and leaned in. You think this is tied to the attack? Will didn't think that at all, but in order to gain the information, he would need to play off that he did. Hard to say, but it's something I came across this morning, and I'd like to rule it out in any case. Porter began to jot down the numbers. I can take a look. Do you have anything else? A name or anything? Jason Merrick. Okay. Let me see what I can find out. Porter turned his chair back to his monitor. Great, thanks. I've got a briefing in room 2A, but I should be out in the next hour. Give me a call if you can. Will left the man to his work and continued to the briefing room. Once inside, Will noted Mendez and the rest of his team already huddled in conversation. He approached Mendez. What's going on? Mendez turned his attention to the rookie agent. Word just came down. A militant cell of ISIS has claimed responsibility. Bahrain? Don't know yet. They call themselves the Army of Islam. The afternoon sun reflected off the shimmering silver paint of her SUV and into her eyes, but Lacey was numb to the minor annoyances and continued to drive along the quiet street that led up to her home. She pulled onto the driveway and waited for the garage door to rise. Her thoughts turned to the numbers, and to Owen Ballard, and the attack, and all that weighed heavily on her mind. Inside the garage, she cut the engine and was still for a moment, trying to calm her thoughts so that she could focus on her family and the things that still needed to be done. Lacey's heels clicked on the travertine floor as she entered through the kitchen and moved into the foyer.
"Olivia! Jackson! Mommy's home!"
Celeste appeared from the utility room with a basket of folded clothes. "They're upstairs. They both wanted to take a nap."
"Together?"
Celeste nodded. The two had been inseparable, and when they weren't with Lacey, they clung even closer to each other.
"Okay, let them rest."
She placed her purse on the foyer table and followed Celeste back inside the kitchen.
"Anything happened while I was out?"
"A few reporters called, wanting comments, but I just said you'd call them back when you were ready."
"I guess I should be expecting more of those types of calls.
And the arrangements?" Celeste handed Lacey a can of Diet Coke from the refrigerator.
"Saturday, 11 a.m.
She gulped down almost the entire can without taking a breath.
"Have you eaten anything today?"
Lacey appeared guilty and shook her head.
"I'll make you a snack."
She didn't wait for Lacey's response and instead retrieved the loaf of bread and began to make her a sandwich.
"Thank you."
Lacey pulled the stool out from beneath the breakfast bar and pushed off her shoes before sitting down. A call was coming in on her phone and the caller ID showed that it was Agent Kaysen.
"Excuse me a moment, Celeste."
Lacey headed toward the family room and answered,
"This is Lacey."
"Lacey, this is Will Kaysen. Do you have a moment to speak?"
"Yes."
Her heart dropped into her stomach as she lowered herself onto the sofa, tucking one leg beneath her.
"I wanted to let you know that your husband's computer and all associated belongings are being released."
He paused for a moment.
"They were unable to retrieve anything from his computer or the flash drive."
Lacey felt at odds with the feelings of relief and uncertainty that washed over her. They found nothing, but that didn't mean nothing was there to find. The damaged laptop and flash drive could have contained the answers she sought.
"When can I get his things?"
"Now, if you wanted to come and get them, unless you'd like me to have them delivered to you, in which case it might take a few hours."
"No, no, I can pick them up. Headquarters?"
"Yes."
"Okay, can I see you there in about an hour?"
"I'll be here. Goodbye, Lacey."
Chapter 8
Lacey presented her badge to security and was allowed entry into headquarters. Teams of agents still swarmed inside. Various operations were underway, and she knew the mall attack was just one, a big one, but just one of many, and that this investigation would be going on for some time. Her first stop would be to see Agent Kaysen and pick up the laptop bag and whatever was contained within it. She approached an agent who worked in the PSYOC room.
"Excuse me, have you seen Agent Kaysen? I'm supposed to be meeting with him."
Porter had just emerged from the break room with a Red Bull in hand.
"I think he's with Mendez and Asak Brandt over in the ops center."
"Thank you."
Lacey turned on her heel and began to leave.
"I heard about your husband," Porter began. "I'm so sorry."
An obliging smile appeared.
"Thank you."
Lacey made the trek to the operations center where she'd managed to track down Agent Kaysen via further inquiries. Finally, she spotted him inside one of the conference rooms, and he'd seen her too through the plate glass walls that comprised the majority of the room. Lacey watched as he appeared to excuse himself and head toward her.
"Evening. I'm sorry I lost track of time. Follow me."
He walked along the corridor to a small office near the south end of the building, where he and SSA Mendez were calling home for the duration of the investigation.
"Sorry about the tight quarters,"
Will began as he entered the office, which was piled high with files and photos and everything else that pertained to the investigation.
"As you can see, there are a lot of moving parts."
He retrieved a file box, and inside was a bag and some miscellaneous papers.
"This is it."
He placed it on the desk. Lacey approached and peered inside. Jay kept that bag with him at all times. She likened it to her purse, which was rarely more than a few feet away from her. She leaned in and a scent still lingered, along with a pungent smell of burnt leather. But she could still smell him on it, and it made her eyes sting with tears.
"So they found nothing of use in here?"
"Nothing. I suppose no one expected to find much. It's just protocol."
"Right."
She glanced again inside the box.
"You have any luck with that number?"
"Not yet. I'll follow up on it later."
"I can't imagine what you must think of me. I just lost my husband, and now I'm suspicious of him. A model wife, right?"
"I don't think that at all, Lacey.
I think you're a woman whose job requires you to be skeptical. I know that doesn't stop when you leave the office. And you just want to know if there's a cause to be worried. Nothing wrong with that.
Lacey offered her hand. Thank you, Will. I'd better head out. Need to check in with my supervisor.
You're not back to work, are you?
No. I just wanted to know that I'm still here and not locked in solitary.
Will regarded her wounded expression. I'll reach out as soon as I hear something, Lacey. You have my word.
She acknowledged him and carried the box on her departure. FBI headquarters was a massive facility with mazes of corridors, and it took several minutes for Lacey to arrive at her boss's office.
Michelle?
She looked away from her screen and smiled, tilting her head in sympathy.
Lacey, what are you doing here? What's in the box? Not your things, I hope.
She pulled the glasses from her face and stood to greet her.
Please come in.
The task force released Jay's things to me, and I just came to pick them up. Lacey set the box down on a chair.
I wanted to stop by and let you know that I'd like to come back soon. I'd like to get back to work.
Oh, Lacey, I'm sure you want nothing more than to help us find answers, but you have to know that we have everyone on this, and I mean everyone. I don't want you to come back before you're ready.
Lacey averted her eyes as feelings floated to the surface once again. They never seemed to stay down for long.
You're right. I haven't even had Jay's funeral yet, and I'm talking about going back to work.
I'm sorry. I'll let you get back to it. She turned around.
Hang on a second.
Michelle moved toward Lacey and turned her gently by the shoulder.
Call me after the funeral. Let me know how you're doing. I think it might be a good idea to see a counselor, you and the kids.
Sure.
She kept the box squarely in between the both of them.
Don't take this the wrong way. What we discussed last week, the job, nothing's changed that, if that's what you're worried about.
The thought had crossed my mind. It's just me now. I have to support the kids.
I know, but rest assured, we will wait for you. However long it takes.
Lacey smiled warmly.
Thank you, Michelle.
She walked out of the office and made her way toward the parking lot. The sun was low in the sky, and the warmth was a nice reminder that summer was well on its way. She pressed the remote to open the hatchback of her Lexus and placed the box inside. Lacey opened the flap of the bag and began searching the pockets. She had no idea what Jay kept in it. A few scorched business cards, some pens, an extra power cord that had nearly melted, and that was it. It wasn't until she lifted the bag from the box that she spotted the flash drive. It was inside a plastic baggie that they must have used for labeling purposes. She opened the bag and retrieved the small device. It was clearly damaged, and on inspection, she knew there was no way to know what was on there. The FBI had tried and failed, so she was fairly confident she wouldn't be able to see anything. As she examined the drive, turning it between her fingers, she noticed a symbol that was instantly recognizable and was immediately reminded of her early days as a computer whiz kid. Going back to her days even before Jay, this symbol was used by most every hacker she'd ever come across. It was a glider. From British mathematician John Conway's Game of Life, the glider was a series of dots inside a grid that was moving and changing, an organism. Conway developed the game back in 1970, and hackers had embraced the symbol to represent their community, and it had been in fairly constant use since the 1990s. Lacey knew of only one person who Jay would still have had contact with who would use that symbol, Aaron Hunter. The thought made her smile. Remembering those times when they would hang out and talk of how they would change the world. But then she remembered that Jay was dead, and she wondered if Aaron knew. Jay must have seen him recently, which lent credence to the idea that he'd been up to something.
Basara's family is still under surveillance, and since the Army of Islam claimed responsibility, the FBI are no longer interested in looking beyond what lies directly in their faces.
Imad Mufid, the man who had taken the life of Farhan Basara, stood in front of his superior.
I will relay your information.
The man turned his chair to peer through his window, which overlooked the city from a substantial height.
You are not to travel back to the United States until such time as you are required to do so.
Mufid nodded and took his leave. Assured he was gone, the man turned back and opened a desk drawer to retrieve a cell phone. After pressing the number, he waited for the line to answer.
Legend speaking. I need to speak with Asan Sajwani.
He was put on hold while static-filled music played. Lei Jin was an important man in his country. A former ambassador, his home was in Beijing. However, he now resided in Dubai and was a hired consultant for several UAE companies that conducted business with China.
Jin, good to hear from you,
Sajwani said upon answering the line.
Instructions has been handed down. There should be no further contact until such time as the FBI conclude the investigation.
Of course. Good day to you, sir.
Sajwani ended the call. Lei Jin placed the phone back inside the drawer and locked it. His part was finished and, in a few days, he could return to Beijing. Lacey drove back to her home in Annandale. Her thoughts now were regarding Aaron Hunter and how she might reach out to him. It had been a year at least since she'd seen him, and wondered how often Jay had been in touch. He hadn't mentioned that name in quite some time. There was a reason Jay had the flash drive, and there wasn't a chance in hell that it had come from anyone other than Aaron. The emblem was small and imprinted on the metal rotating cover of the USB drive. She wasn't surprised the FBI missed it. Lacey had become accustomed to viewing things differently, thanks to her former life, and so her instinct was to look inside the cover, because she'd seen the emblem there many times before. It was the kind of thing a hacker would do. Even if the FBI had found it, they wouldn't know who it came from. In any case, she would have to find Aaron Hunter, because he might be the only man who knew what Jay was up to. On her arrival home, the evening sun was obscured by dense clouds that had rolled in from the Atlantic, leaving behind a gray, dusky sky. Parking her car in the driveway, Lacey stepped outside, noticing the air had turned balmy. She usually parked inside the garage, but Jay's car would be returned tomorrow, and it would occupy one of the two double bays. Pulling up beside it would seem too normal, as though he was inside playing with the kids, and so she just couldn't bring herself to follow her routine. Her car would stay here for the foreseeable future. She entered the number on the keypad and the front door clicked open. A wave of sorrow passed through her every time she entered the home. Jay was everywhere in this house, and it was hard to live with that. Lacey knew the impact this was having on Jackson and Olivia. They needed her, and she hadn't been there for them. Not really. It was Celeste who rested on the sofa in the family room as Lacey entered. The children were not there, and when Lacey began to walk in search of them, Celeste opened her eyes. I was just taking a moment to myself. I hope that's all right. Of course it is. The children are in the backyard playing. I checked on them only minutes ago. Thank you, and please, go ahead and rest. I'll sit out back with them until it gets dark. Lacey slipped off her shoes and began to walk toward the living room where the French doors overlooked the backyard. She spotted them playing on this swing set that Jay had put together for them last Christmas. It was the first time since the attack that she'd seen them outside at all. It was a welcome sight. Lacey was about to join them when her cell phone rang.
Hi, Will.
Lacey, hi. I hope I didn't catch you at a bad time.
Not at all.
She gazed out at the children.
Listen, about that number. You were right. It's a bank account number.
Her mouth turned to cotton in an instant.
Is it Jay's?
It appears so, yes.
Is there any money in it? Do you know where it came from?
It was an account at a bank in Panama, but I don't know the full details yet. I'm working with the bank to release the information, per the Global Information Exchange. Secret offshore bank accounts stopped being a secret a while ago. They'll be releasing the information to us within the next 24 hours.
Her heart dropped into her stomach. So he was taking money from someone. Was it Nova?
I don't want to jump to any conclusions until the bank releases the information, and you shouldn't either.
What does this mean in terms of the attack?
I don't know. I can't say it means anything. That was the other thing I wanted to mention, though. A group that goes by the name of the Army of Islam has claimed responsibility. They have ties to Bahrain, and it's only a matter of time before we connect them to Farhan Basara.
This news hit her fast and hard. She'd only been there an hour or two ago, and now they knew who was responsible for the attack. Lacey considered mentioning the flash drive and Aaron Hunter, but given the news about Jay's private bank account, she couldn't risk throwing fuel on the fire. And she wasn't ready to throw in the towel on her husband, who, regardless of everything else, had still been murdered. She had to keep her faith in him alive in the face of his death.
Thank you for looking into this, Will. Please let me know when you hear back from the bank.
I will. Goodbye, Lacey.
She cast a blank stare outside, hardly noticing the towing and froing of the kids as they raced around the yard. There was something she needed to do, something that would only take a moment. Lacey ran to her office and turned on her computer. She logged into their cell phone provider website and looked at Jay's recent calls, taking note of the numbers she didn't recognize. There were several because he also used that phone for business. However, in addition to that, she could do one other thing. Lacey logged onto the app that showed where Jay's phone had been over the course of a period of time specified in the search. They both had the app and had agreed to install it because of the kids and because of her job. Jay always felt she could be somehow in danger, and it made him feel better, so she willingly agreed. She checked his whereabouts in the days prior to the attack. He was either at the office, at a restaurant, or on the golf course. Except for the day he went to the mall. 2 hours prior, he'd been at a place she didn't recognize. She jotted down the address and the duration and logged out. That could be Aaron's place. Lacey made her way back down the stairs, where she spotted Celeste heading toward the backyard. I'm sorry, did the kids disturb you? No, not at all. I couldn't really rest, and I thought I'd sit outside with you. A look on her face brought embarrassment to Lacey. She'd been gone most of the day, and it was the first time she'd been gone so long since they lost Jay. Without intention, Celeste had put her in her place where the kids were concerned. I'll go out there with you. She glanced at the slip of paper with Aaron's address. This can wait. The kids heard the door open and smiles appeared on their red, overheated faces. Mommy! Jackson shouted as he raced toward her, propelling himself into her arms. Where have you been? You've been gone all day. I know, sweetheart. I'm sorry about that. Olivia was a little slower and appeared slightly less forgiving than her younger sibling. You said you would only be a couple of hours. Oh, honey, I'm sorry. There was just a lot for me to take care of. But I'm here now, and I'm not going anywhere. Lacey arrived at the address early the following morning. She tried to slip out before the kids woke up, because she didn't want to have to explain why she was leaving again. She knocked on the door and waited. A man opened it, and a smile spread on her face. Aaron Hunter. Lacey? Aaron pulled the door further.
Come in, please. It's so good to see you. Wow, how long's it been?
Lacey stepped inside. A long time. I'm sorry for dropping in unannounced, but... He stopped her before she could continue.
Hey, how's Jay? I saw him the other day, and he was supposed to get back with me, but I haven't heard from him.
He walked toward the kitchenette.
You want some coffee? Just brewed a fresh pot.
Sure, thanks. That's why I'm here, actually. She had to gather herself once more. Jay was killed in the mall attack. He stood frozen with the carafe in his hand. Aaron?
Sorry. Did you say he was at the mall when the attack happened?
Yes, he was there.
Oh my God, Lacey. I'm so sorry.
He set the pot back on the counter and moved to embrace her.
I saw him that day, for God's sake.
I know. And that was the other reason I wanted to reach out to you. Aaron, the FBI took his computer and tried to get into it, but it was too damaged from the explosion.
Here, come sit down. Aaron led her to the sofa. Why the hell would they do that?
Because of the connection between Argus Solutions and Nova Investments, the owners of the mall. Jay's company provided cybersecurity, and the FBI said they needed to rule out any connection to the attack.
Lacey, I have to stop you right there. You need to know something. Jay came to see me that day. He suspected Nova Investments of conducting backroom dealings with someone at Argus. And as it turns out, he may have been right. He came to me for help and asked if I could hack into Nova's server and locate emails from a man named Tom Neville. And so I did. But before you judge me, you should know that there was evidence that Neville was working with someone by the name of Owen Ballard. I found several emails, and in fact, I copied them onto a flash drive for Jay.
The FBI found the drive, but it was damaged. Aaron, I just got it back from them last night, and I saw the glider. I knew it had to be you.
The glider, Aaron began. You remembered.
How could I forget? I need to know what you found.
Do you think Jay was targeted?
I don't think so. But there are some other things that I need to ask you about. Things that put Jay in a pretty bad light.
And you believe these things?
Right now, I don't know what to believe. That's why I needed to see you. Can you meet me at Verona's later this morning, say 10 o'clock?
I need to take care of a few things first. I'll be there. I remember the place. He paused again. Lacey, I'm so sorry. Jay was a good friend. We all used to be good friends. I know. Thank you, Aaron. I'll see you later.
Chapter 9. Northeast Washington, not far from D.C. proper, was Kenilworth Aquatic Gardens. Nearby was a small cafe where Lacey, Jay, and Aaron, and a few other friends would meet. The last time Lacey was there was in October 2011, shortly before she left Argus Solutions for the FBI. So when she arrived there again, a flood of memories washed over her. Happier, more carefree times. It wasn't until she spotted Aaron with his still-shocked expression that she remembered why she was here. Aaron stood on her approach and opened his arms for an embrace.
Hey there, right on time.
Isn't that just like me? Lacey pulled out a chair and sat down. Aaron returned to his seat.
You want a coffee or tea or something?
No, thank you.
Right.
He swirled a stick in his drink.
I imagine you'd like to know why it was that Jay came to see me that day.
I know we haven't seen each other in a long time, and it just seems odd that he chose that day to reach out to you.
I honestly don't think he knew what else to do.
Aaron paused for a moment.
Did he mention to you that he had some concerns over a client of Argus?
He did. He wasn't comfortable with Nova Investment and Argus's relationship with them. He suspected they were rooting around for information on the employees.
He wasn't wrong, Lacey.
Aaron retrieved a flash drive from his pocket.
I made another copy of the original files Jay had in his possession that day.
He slid it across the table.
It looks like Nova Investments, and in particular Tom Neville, was collecting personal information on not only Argus employees, but contractual information on some of Argus's other clients, who just happened to be Nova's competitors, one of them which was an account Jay managed, the Dalian Company.
She reached for the drive. Why? To what end?
The competition aspect of it makes sense. If Tom Neville was wanting an inside track on how his competitors were handling their security measures, how much they were spending, etc., I mean, I can't give you an acceptable reason why, but it was clear Jay felt he had to bring this to someone's attention. Take a look at the files. It does appear as though there was collusion on the part of an employee of Argus, someone by the name of Owen Ballard.
Lacey closed her eyes. God damn it. I knew he was involved somehow. He came to see me the next morning, and he was acting strange.
No one, to my knowledge, knew that Jay had received this information. I can only guess he would have said something to you about it that night, if he'd had a chance.
Her eyes reddened again, but she inhaled deeply and pulled back. I'll take a look at the files. Thank you for bringing this to me, and thanks for agreeing to meet. Aaron reached for a hand that rested on the table.
Lacey, if there's anything I can do.
I know. I'll send you the details on the funeral. It's Saturday. She rose from the table. Thank you, Aaron. It really was nice to see you again. I'm just sorry it had to be like this. As she drove back home, theories about what Jay was doing, how he was involved in this again overshadowed her grief. If she'd only known more, she might have been able to help him. But he had reached out to her, and she dismissed his concerns. Now he was gone, and it was time to face his parents, who would be devastated if they thought he'd done something or had been tangled up in this mess. She wasn't particularly close to them, even though they lived less than an hour away. Since that night, since she lost him, they'd been wrapped up in their own grief. Her parents had flown in earlier today and were the reason she had to see Aaron first thing this morning. She'd picked them up at the airport and went to the gardens after dropping them off. Lacey spotted all of them sitting on the front porch with the kids. At first glance, were it not for the fact that they were all here for a funeral, the image sparked comparisons to that of a Norman Rockwell painting. As she stepped out of the car, Jackson and Olivia rushed to greet her. "Hello, sweethearts." She kissed each on top of their heads. Come on, let me go say hi to the grandparents. She piloted them back to the porch where she was greeted with sympathetic gazes. Lacey greeted her parents as they stood. I'm sorry I had to leave you here earlier.
That's perfectly fine, sweetheart. You had things to take care of, her mother said. We've just been chatting with Frank and Alice.
Oh, honey. Alice rose to embrace Lacey first. Hi, Alice. I'm so sorry I haven't been to see you in the last few days.
We're the ones who are sorry, Lacey. You and the children deserve to have a full life with Jay, and you've been cheated out of it because...
Alice's voice trailed off, quivering in the process. "Can I get anyone something to eat?" Celeste read the room perfectly as usual. "I'd like to go and put my things down first, but I think we could all use some food." The morning light seeped into Lacey's bedroom with generous vitality. Lacey forced herself out of bed, glancing again at the empty space next to her. The kids had opted to sleep with their grandparents, and they willingly agreed. She had missed them in the night, and it had been the first night alone in her bed. With a few hours before they were to be picked up by the limousine, Lacey made her way downstairs to enjoy the precious few moments before the door would be shut on a life she had known and loved for the past 12 years. "Good morning." Lacey entered the kitchen to see the grandparents drinking coffee and reading the papers while the kids stabbed their forks at pancakes and bacon Celeste had so kindly made. "Good morning, honey," Audrey began. "Did you manage any sleep?" "A little bit, yes." Lacey leaned in to kiss her mother's cheek and poured a cup of coffee. "Can I get anyone a refill?" With her first sip, she turned her attention toward the kids. "How are you guys doing?" Olivia looked up from her plate of food that she had merely pushed around. "We have to bury Daddy today, don't we?" Lacey caressed Olivia's long, wavy brown hair. "Yes, baby, we do." "I don't want to go," Jackson said. "I'm not going to the funeral." "Sweetheart, you should say goodbye to Daddy." "No, I won't go. I won't say goodbye." Jackson threw his fork to the floor. "I need you there, Jack, and so does your sister. You're the man of the house now, and Daddy would want you to be strong." "I don't care. I don't want to be strong. I want my daddy." He jumped from the stool and ran upstairs to his bedroom. "Just give him some time, Lacey. He'll come around," Alice approached. "This will get better in time." "How do you do it? He was your son, and you're being so strong." "I only look strong, believe me." Alice smiled and put her plate in the dishwasher. "I'd better get cleaned up." Lacey adjusted Jackson's tie and brushed the sleeve of his button-down shirt. "There now, don't you look handsome?" Jackson's mouth turned down. "I told you, I don't want to go. Why are you making me?" "Because, sweetheart, I need you there. Can you do this for me, please?" He nodded reluctantly. "Thank you. Now go tell your sister to come down. The car will be here soon to pick us up." "It's here." Lacey's father reached for his hat. "Okay. I guess we'd better go now." Lacey opened the front door and waited for everyone to file out. A final check inside and her chin began to quiver. For a moment, she saw him standing on the stairs, smiling at her. She squeezed her eyes shut and closed the door. The car arrived and the family emerged, walking inside the church that neither Lacey nor Jay ever attended, though she wished they had now. A volunteer led her and the children to the front pew, and seated behind them were her parents, Jay's parents, and his sisters. Lacey was an only child, which in this moment made her feel like the loneliest person in the world. In retrospect, which was always a point of view when tragedy struck, she regretted not having a closer relationship with Jay's sisters and their families. They lived in New York, but distance was an excuse for those who just couldn't be bothered. The church began to fill with family, friends, co-workers from Argus Solutions, and Lacey's department at the FBI. She spotted Agent Kaysen lingering in the back and nodded her acknowledgement. Michelle soon approached. "Hey, how are you holding up?" Lacey eyed the children, who were quiet. "We're hanging in there. Thank you for coming." "Of course. We're all here for you, Lacey." "Thank you. By the people here, I can see how much he was loved and how much he'll be missed." Michelle nodded and returned to her seat. Aaron also approached for brief respects, but as he was about to walk away, Lacey stopped him. "Why don't you sit here with us? That is, if you don't mind." He turned back in mild surprise. "Of course not. I'd be honored." Finally, Lacey spotted Owen and Julianne only minutes before the services were about to begin. She eyed them as they made their way to the middle of the church. Her burning gaze wasn't lost on him, and Owen averted his attention and disappeared among the guests. The funeral was over, and at Lacey's insistence, her parents had flown home the next day. They weren't much for traveling, and she knew they needed to get back, even if they wouldn't admit it. And Jay's parents, who didn't often spend time with the children, suggested they stay with them for a while,
but Lacey rejected the offer for purely selfish reasons. She didn't want to be without them, nor did she want to be alone in the house. And now Monday had arrived, and they were all supposed to get on with their lives. Except Lacey still needed answers to questions she hadn't made known to anyone but Aaron Hunter and Agent Will Kaysen. She had to know the extent of Jay's involvement, but more importantly, what Owen Ballard was up to. Had he dragged Jay down with him? The only way to know was to see Agent Kaysen and hope he could shed light on this ever-darkening situation. She made her turn off the highway and was on her way to headquarters. A quick call to the agent, and she was set to meet him in 30 minutes. Lacey soon arrived and made her way into the op center once again. Will met her in the lobby. "You sure you want to do this today?" "Yes," her answer came without hesitation. "Okay, let's go talk in my office." Lacey retrieved the flash drive from her purse upon entering the agent's office. "First of all, I want to thank you for coming to Jay's funeral, and I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to speak, but it was very kind of you." Will nodded. "About the flash drive you returned to me," Lacey continued. "I didn't notice it until after I left here the other day, but the flash drive in Jay's bag was from an old friend."
"How do you know that?"
Will lowered himself onto the chair. "It's a long story, but I reached out to this old friend and I met with him. This," she held up the device, "this has the same information as what was destroyed on the other drive. My friend said it proves that Tom Neville with Nova Investments was working with Owen Ballard at Argus Solutions."
"What do you mean, working with? Weren't they a client?"
"Yes, but this was beyond any contractual scope of work. This was backroom type of information being exchanged."
"Can I take a look?"
Lacey handed him the drive. "That's why I'm here. With the funeral, my family in town. I haven't seen what's on it yet myself. I'm only going by what my friend has relayed."
Will plugged in the storage device and turned his monitor so Lacey could view it as well. Apparently, there are communications indicating Neville was interested in looking into the personal histories of Argus's staff. Jay mentioned something to that effect before he died. I couldn't begin to tell you for what purpose, though. Will opened one of the files.
"This appears to be an email."
He eyed Lacey.
"This is not information we should have in our possession."
"I understand the legalities, Will, but I also believe there's something greater at stake here."
"For now, we keep this between us. Anything on here isn't going to be admissible, regardless of what we find, and I don't want to have to explain how we happened upon it."
He continued to peruse through the email. "Right there," Lacey pointed to the screen. "What's Tom Neville saying about a deposit?"
"It's fairly vague, but it appears he's indicating a deposit was made as per their agreement. That could mean anything from a contractual deposit to a deposit made in a security account. Who knows?"
Will's cell phone began to buzz on his desk.
"Hang on a second. I better get this."
He turned away from Lacey.
"Kaysen here."
Lacey continued to view the files.
"Yeah. Okay. If you wouldn't mind shooting me an email, I'd appreciate it." "Great. Thanks."
Lacey was about to speak, but the look on Will's face stopped her as he ended the call.
"The details are being sent via email now. But Lacey, the bank rep says that the account was opened about a month ago in Jay's name and that two large deposits have been made."
"Where was the money from?"
"I don't know. They were cash deposits, both made within a week of each other."
"A cash deposit would have had to been made in person, right?"
"Not necessarily. A wire transfer is possible, but I'll know more once I get the details."
"Okay. But Jay was the one who uncovered these emails. He was the one who suspected Owen was up to something. Why would he have done that if he'd been on the receiving end of the deal?"
"It has to be something derived by those two."
She again pointed to the screen. "We need to talk to them, Will."
"I understand your demands for answers here, Lacey, I do. But my job is to find those responsible for the attack, not just the group who claimed responsibility, but the financiers, the planners. This doesn't seem to be tied to the attack. It's just an unfortunate situation your husband seems to have gotten caught up in."
"What if we're not seeing something that could be right in front of our faces?" Lacey's tone took on a certain desperation. "What if Owen Ballard and Tom Neville are involved with this group somehow? You can't believe this is just a coincidence. The timing? Jay's death?" She was ready to propose the idea that had finally formed in her mind. "Jay's been set up. It's that simple." Owen Ballard walked along the corridor, passing the now empty office that used to belong to Jay. All that remained inside was a desk and a phone. It was as though Jay hadn't spent the last 8 years in that office. It was as though he never existed at all. Owen soon realized he'd stopped walking and again continued to his own office. He hadn't slept. His eyes were puffy with pronounced dark circles. If anyone were to notice, they might think he was ill. But Owen kept his head down and began working. It had been just over a week, and so far, no further word from Neville. Perhaps his visit had paid off, and Neville realized that keeping a low profile was the right thing to do. Owen knew what would come next, though, and it was something for which he lacked a certain preparedness. He'd played too many people, and it was about to catch up to him. This wasn't part of the plan, but the money kept coming, and lots of it. The buzz of his cell phone startled him back into the moment. He picked up the phone, noting that there was no caller ID available, but he knew he should answer. "Yes." Owen gazed through the window that faced the corridor. People had begun to arrive to work, most of them still appearing distraught from Jay's funeral. A black cloud hung over the entire office. "Yes, sir. I understand. Goodbye." He ended the call. The time had come for him to take the final step and bring closure to the arrangement he'd had, and that would mean his time at Argus Solutions would be over. Chapter 10. The idea planted in Agent Kaysen's head by Lacey Merrick resonated throughout the course of the next few days, and now he set out to find a connection to Neville outside what they'd already discovered, which was a bank account in Jay's name and a few discreetly worded emails exchanged between Tom Neville and Owen Ballard, emails that Jay Merrick happened upon the day he was killed in the bombing. Lacey was right about one thing. A coincidence, this was not. But to prove it would be another thing entirely. His first step would be to get a better understanding of this group, the Army of Islam, who claimed responsibility. Who were the masterminds? How did they get the money? These were pieces of the puzzle still missing, and a legitimate part of the investigation. Whether any of it tied to Bala remained a mystery, but it was where he needed to start. And that required a discussion between himself and a local informant Mendez had been made aware of by D.C. Metro Police during the course of the investigation. They also had an anti-terrorism task force and had their own contacts. Kadir Tawfiq was one of them. With Mendez's blessing, Metro Police set up the meeting along with one of their own. Tawfiq was a cautious man and insisted his handler also be in attendance. Detective Eric Dalton was Tawfiq's contact and had been enlisted to facilitate the meeting, and had already instructed Kaysen to take a back seat while he attempted to assure his man of their objectives. "Thank you for meeting with us, Kadir." The two shook hands as they sat out in front of a small cafe. "As I mentioned, this is Special Agent Kaysen. He's here investigating the attack on the Fairfax Mall 10 days ago. "I am well aware of the attack, Detective." Kadir offered his hand to Will. "Good to meet you, sir." "Likewise," he returned the greeting. "I'd like to ask you about the Army of Islam, which has taken responsibility for the attack. What do you know about them?"
"I suppose about as much as you do, Agent. But I can tell you with complete certainty, they are not the ones responsible."
Kaysen looked at Dalton with some confusion.
"They've already claimed responsibility."
Kadir smiled.
"That's because no one else did, and they are looking to make a name for themselves. They need to raise money, and the best way to do that is to prove they can pull off an attack."
"How do you know this for certain?" Dalton asked.
"Because I know everything that goes on in this city, Detective. You should know that."
"Did you hear something to suggest this? Do you have any names?" Dalton pressed on.
"I hear a lot of things, like the attack had nothing to do with terrorism, at least not Islamic."
"Look, I appreciate you being here, Kadir, but frankly, we'd like something a little more concrete than hearsay."
Kaysen was growing irritated by his vague answers.
"All right, Agent Kaysen." Kadir leaned in. "I will tell you this. I have ears on everything that goes on in every mosque in D.C. This was not carried out by ISIS or any of their splinter groups. There is no suicide bomber. A bag was left behind. From what I understand, the detonator and initiator were subpar at best, outdated at worst. These are not the trademark of ISIS or any other such organization in this day when far superior materials are available."
Kaysen knew he was right, However, they had received no intel on any other group that might have conducted the attack.
What are your sources telling you, then? Who do you think is responsible? We know Liwa, the parent company of the mall owners, are based in Dubai. Have you been made aware of anyone from that area traveling here?
Kadir looked at Detective Dalton.
This is where you should be looking.
He turned back to Kaysen.
Dubai is not the enemy, but they have many enemies. You should be turning your attention to them. The splinter group.
Kadir shook his head.
They are nothing more than kidnappers and thieves. They are not a structured group that could carry out such an attack. Companies in Dubai have many enemies that extend far beyond the reach of the U.S. or the UAE.
And do you know who these enemies are? Dalton asked.
I know that no organization based in Dubai has funneled money here for an attack.
Kadir turned to Kaysen.
I know that Liwa Properties has a great many investments worldwide, and I also know that there are entities that have shown an interest in acquiring some of their assets.
Kaysen was beyond frustrated now because all this man was doing was casting doubt over the entire Liwa Properties organization with no concrete information to back it up.
Thank you for your time, Mr. Tawfiq.
Kaysen rose and shook his head. I need to be getting back. Dalton appeared surprised by the move, followed by Kaysen.
What the hell are you doing?
Before they made it beyond earshot, Kadir spoke.
This was not jihad, Agent Kaysen, and I'm surprised you do not know the difference.
Where the hell did you find this guy?